This is a Radio Charwell original podcast.
We love science!
So sport's quite interesting, isn't it? Yeah, that's very true. Yeah, because Sydney in front of the TV all day. No, so yeah.
And also, I've done a lot of things, so I'm kind of preparing patients before surgery and taking care of them after surgery.
Wow!
And doing observations.
Science
to
be
explained.
Why don't you give me a
mystery?
What do you think?
Healthcare, mental health, vaccines, and
science and beyond.
Hi, my name is Daniela, and I'm a diabetes researcher.
Very nice to meet you, and I'm Alex, and for this program, we're going to be talking a little bit about, a lot about diabetes, to be honest, and Daniela here will talk about her research and how she got into diabetes in the first place, and overall, very interesting career as well. So I was thinking to first do things chronologically, so from kind of when you were little, what made you interested in science?
I remember a very specific moment that kind of pushed me towards wanting to learn more about the cells or the natural world in general. And that is when we had biology classes was it high school? Most likely high school. And then we were learning about how life became to exist and how it all started from genes and proteins, how they all came together and, you know, formed a cell. And I was thinking, how cool is that? And how microscopic our origins are and how intelligent at the same time. I was just really impressed by all this information transcription and then making it happen through proteins and such things that I never really cared about before. And I was thinking, wow, I really want to know more. I even remember finding an essay that I kept from high school in which I wrote, although life took me elsewhere after high school, but I did write in that essay that I want to study biomedicine or biology and then I want to be a scientist.
I know from your kind of profile that you really wanted to be a writer, so how do you think things changed into you kind of doing what you are now than when you were little and wanting to be a writer?
I still write a lot, just in a different capacity. And I'm guessing books were my first go-to world because I learned to read very young. I had older sisters and I learned to read when I was four, and then I just went into books and that stayed as a theme. I enjoy creating worlds. I enjoy taking people on a journey with me. I enjoy sharing my world with them through writing. And I think this is something that I still do, but through science. So I communicate what I do through either research articles or I do something short that's going to be shared with everyone. Again, I tell my stories. It's just, it's a different topic these days, but more or less, the passion is still there.
And now let's kind of move on to what you're doing presently. So I know your kind of academic background. So you did a medical degree in North Macedonia and you did a PhD. Was that 4 years?
4 years plus 1 year of research. Okay. This is how the Japanese system is set up.
That's interesting.
You have to, unlike other universities, you have to go through 1 year research program there and then you take entrance exam for the PhD.
Oh, really? Wow.
That was quite stressful. So I had to study and prepare for the entrance exam, which was composed of several parts. And then as it is custom in the Japanese system, they only publish the results as who passed and who hasn't passed. Yeah. They don't write the numbers or the scores on anything. I'm not sure whether it's similar here in the UK. But in a way, it's just like, yes, pass or not. But my professor told me that I scored in the top five. And I said, yeah,
that's
I could
amazing.
Do this. Yes, wow. Yes. It brought me a lot of credits for the years after. My professor never forgot, luckily. And I was happy as well.
So I am really curious, why specifically diabetes? Because there are so many kind of research topics that you could have done, all these different areas. So why do you pick diabetes?
Like many of us who do research on a specific topic or in a specific disease area, it is a personal story. So my father lived with diabetes for many, many years courageously. And when the time came for me to kind of shift careers and when I got the opportunity to start my PhD, my father was still around. And after talking to him, I got the feeling that I could do more than just hear about it. I've always, you know, supported him in all of his experiences living with the disease, but I was thinking I can actually do a bit more. So I decided to do research about diabetes. And I'm very specific about it. So there are mainly two types of diabetes, type 1 and type 2.
Yeah.
My father had type 2, and therefore I've always stayed in that field. And I still do type 2 diabetes research.
So what things did you learn from your PhD? What were the kind of main focuses of the PhD, and what were your outcomes?
When you're studying or researching about diabetes in general, there are a few areas that you can focus on. You can focus on the cells that make hormones that regulate blood sugar, which is a, let's say, a part of the body located, or parts of the body located in the pancreas. Or you can focus on the gut where the food initially comes in, and there are other types of cells there that kind of relay the signals from the food to the pancreas. So this is what I actually did in Japan. There are types of hormones called incretin hormones, and these are the ones that actually relay the information from the gut to the pancreas. So
gut
I was
hormones.
Focusing on that. Yes.
Yeah. Written that down.
Oh, okay. Yes. Please. Do I need to elaborate more on the gut hormones?
I am actually a little bit curious, so why don't we get a little bit into the science of it? Why not?
These days, the gut hormones are very in. Although people may not know the hormones as such, but you've probably heard about Ozempic, Mounjaro, and similar weight loss drugs. And these drugs are actually incretin-like drugs. So they mimic the action of these normal hormones that our gut produces. And among many actions that the hormones have, they also reduce appetite. They kind of speed up the emptying of the stomach and the transit of food through the gut. And this is how, among other ways, they achieve or they induce weight loss and like decrease of appetite in people. But before we actually got to that, the most important thing about incretin hormones is that they actually boost up the hormone release from the pancreas, from these tiny organs in the pancreas called islets. And as everyone has heard about insulin, I'm just going to talk about it. So basically, incretin hormones boost the insulin release from the pancreas, from the islets, in a response to whatever food or the amount of food, the timing of food, of food intake as well. So they're there to kind of fine-tune hormone release and to keep the blood sugar levels always tightly controlled.
Yeah. So what are the average kind of blood sugar levels? What is a good range, do you think?
There are two measurement units, and I think that most of Europe uses millimolar per liter.
Yeah.
And the range would be, it's quite tight. It would be between 3.1 or 3.3 up until 5.8. or different reference units say 6.1, but I would say these days that is slight of a push. But this is what the body does in healthy people, meaning that whether you've been eating, you know, 2 hours ago or just like half an hour ago, the blood sugar should stay within that range.
Yeah.
And then America, I believe, and most likely not only Japan but other Southeast Asian countries, they use different units.
What do they use?
Milligram per deciliter. That would be between 110 to 350
mm-hmm.
milligram per deciliter. But these are older units.
Yeah.
But I've noticed that in literature, and obviously when I was doing the PhD, that these units were still in use.
Science and beyond. Radio Cherwell.
So, is it okay if you explain a little bit about the anatomy of the pancreas and the islet cells and that alpha, beta? And I found out that there's a delta cell. Yeah,
as well.
I'm very curious.
And some
about that.
Other here and there as well, but these would be the three main cells in the islet. Right, going back to the pancreas, that is a very specific organ that kind of has a dual function.
Yeah.
It's in our body not only to release hormones, which is defined as its endocrine function, but it also has an exocrine function, which means it helps with food digestion. So the pancreas is connected to the gallbladder, and then all the enzymes that are circulating between these two body parts are helping with food digestion and releasing enzymes that help with this process. But since diabetes is related to the endocrine part of the pancreas, I would just focus on that, and that is represented by these small, as I call them, cell blobs, called islets or islets of Langerhans.
Yes.
Fun fact!
Which I believe was a student from Australia, Paul Langerhans?
I think so.
Was it?
I learned a little bit about that.
Right?
Yeah,
so
that sounds right.
It is most definitely a student who discovered the islets while he was studying medicine. But his exact geographic location escapes me at this moment. So these tiny dots, I mean, when you look at the islets just by naked eye, they do look like just like a dot made with a pen. They are scattered throughout the pancreas, in touch with blood vessels, nerves as well, so they can accurately reply or respond to everything that is happening in the body. And as you said, they're composed mainly of three types of cells making different types of hormones. So we have the alpha cells that make the hormone glucagon, which actually is supposed to push blood sugar up when we're not eating, or just has to tell the body, oh, you need some sugar, right?
Yeah.
Then we have the beta cells that make insulin, which is the counteracting hormone of glucagon. And this is the one that tells the cells there is a bit of too much sugar in the blood, so all the there are several peripheral tissues that respond to insulin, and they actually store or use the insulin as a signal, they store the glucose inside their cells. And then there is the somatostatin, which is made by the delta cells, and it serves as kind of a mediator between these two types of cells, a peacemaker, shall we say, in a certain way, to kind of always help them work together.
Okay, I was very curious about what the delta cell does, because we don't really go into it that much in A-level biology, so I was curious.
I think evolutionary, delta cells might have appeared, this is purely speculation by the way, but they might have appeared slightly later as the islet was emerging and trying to respond to these basic triggers, like is there too much sugar or too little sugar, and how does the tissue respond to all of this, and keeping all these cells in check, most likely through somatostatin. But cells do communicate to each other in so many different ways, not just through somatostatin.
Okay, so moving on to the more kind of present day, know that you have the Nastesco group. I was very curious about that and how it was
started. Just starting to become a reality.
Yeah.
I'm currently recruiting people to join my group. I was just doing the interviews last week, and I'm expecting some students to join, but it will be a very small group at the beginning, because the size of your group mainly depends on your funding.
Yeah.
And I'm in this early stage of independence, which means that there will be a bit of time until my group grows again because of funding. Okay.
I mean, this all sounds really interesting, so who knows, maybe one day I'll,
hopefully,
you know.
Hopefully you have your own group as well.
Yeah.
That's the hope,
mm-hmm.
Yes.
Yeah. So I know it's about islet protein turnover, and I was very curious about what that means. So
as many people are, including my funders, when I was applying for funding,
yeah.
I was trying to come up with a better expression, because it could be slightly misguiding when I say protein turnover, which means a balance between protein making and protein breaking.
Mm-hmm.
And also protein synthesis, or the making of protein, is one of the basic building blocks of life. But I'm trying through a specific marker that the islets contain. These are islets from genetically modified animals.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm focusing on this specific protein that hopefully serves as a template,
mm-hmm.
which or serves maybe as a readout of how actual protein synthesis happens
mm-hmm.
in beta cells or in the islet in general. And I'm interested in that because, first of all, it's kind of a build up of a story that I've been working on for some time, even when I was in Birmingham. And that was about the differences of same type of cells and whether
yeah.
these differences are an asset or a liability.
Mm-hmm.
So I was looking earlier at the influence of genes and beta cell specific genes that are important for the function of the islets, which means important for the insulin secretion. And I'm kind of building on that
mm-hmm.
knowledge with now not focusing on genes, but on proteins and how actually the islet regulates that when we're healthy or when we have type 1, type 2 diabetes, or even when we are transplanting islets from donors to again, patients with type 1, most likely, or type 2 diabetes. So it is a theme that has been a kind of a constant thing in my research for the past, seven more years.
Mm-hmm. Quite a long time.
And again, I do want to focus on this very basic mechanism
mm-hmm.
of cells, because it could be used to one day tailor therapies when choosing one over the other type of drug. It could be linked to how these drugs affect protein synthesis, or when assessing islets that are meant for transplantation,
mm-hmm.
hopefully finding markers that will help us sort better performing islets that will be better or more useful for the recipients.
Mm-hmm.
So there are many, many applications if you are focusing on just one local
mm-hmm.
core process.
Wow, that's a lot. So you could be potentially contributing to a lot of treatments then.
Yes, but
yeah.
as I
mm-hmm.
like to remind people, science mm-hmm. is a team effort.
Yeah.
I look at my work as a drop in the ocean,
mm-hmm.
but then the ocean is composed of many, many drops. And the hope of each of us that do research in any area, especially in this setting, in diabetes, is that each of us contributes just a bit, but then that knowledge together actually helps
yeah.
tailor therapies, come up with new therapies, target each stage of the disease from diagnosis to therapy and
mm-hmm.
so on.
Yeah. I was wondering if you could talk a little bit more about how type 2 diabetes is managed, since you focus more on type 2 than type 1.
I don't think that would be my my jurisdiction.
Okay.
Because I would leave that to clinicians and
mm-hmm.
yeah, to colleagues that actually work with patients with type 1 or 2 diabetes.
Mm-hmm.
I could talk about the specifics of the disease on a cellular or pathophysiological level
yeah.
because that also affects at the end diagnosis, therapies, adjustment of lifestyle and so on.
Mm-hmm.
Unlike type 1 diabetes that appears quite abruptly, type 2 diabetes develops over time because it is a result of several factors that play together to cause a disease. That will be the genetic background. Some
mm-hmm.
of us carry genes that make us more susceptible to the disease.
Mm-hmm.
Then it's also a result of our more and more sedentary lifestyle that
mm-hmm.
we've adopted over the past 80 to 100 years. It's also a result of environmental triggers as well. So it's a multifactorial disease. And as I said, it develops over time, which is good and bad, because it helps with diagnosis, meaning if people know about the main symptoms of the disease, they can actually hear their body when something is wrong, mm-hmm. which would be the early stages of the disease development, and they can go and see a doctor earlier.
Mm-hmm.
For us as researchers, that stage is also very important, because this is the stage when you can learn the most about how a cell begins to fail.
Mm-hmm.
And then basically whatever happens throughout the disease development, throughout the different types of therapies that the patients are receiving, for us these stages are important as well, because these are all stages of intervention where we can learn more, we can learn how to correct the failures, and again the final goal would be to improve therapies. One of the final goals. Of course, everyone who is researching about a disease, what we all want most is to find the exact reason and cure it fully.
Mm-hmm.
But in terms of diabetes treatment, I think we've come a long way. We're doing quite a lot, and we're able to control the condition quite well.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a team effort again between researchers and healthcare professionals and patients as well.
Yeah.
We all have to talk to each other.
It is a team effort, isn't it? Yeah, I think that's kind of something that I needed to hear, because being on kind of the borderline of doing medicine or biomedicine and potentially research, I don't know that much about the research side of things, you know? So I think that was really educational.
In our setting, in research, we tried to copy or mimic everything that happens in the body and all these stages,
mm-hmm.
from a disease onset to progression, therapy and control or mitigation of the disease. So all these things are very linked. That's why when we talk about our research, we like to say from the bench to the bedside, because
mm-hmm.
again, with this team effort of everyone involved, including patients, because the more informed they are, the better they do with their therapy, the better or more capable they are of adjusting their lifestyle to control their condition. So again, I keep going back to the team effort and team knowledge, not just effort.
Yeah.
Science and beyond. Radio Carewell.
Okay, I think I have run out of questions to ask.
Okay.
Well, thank you so much for your time. And maybe let me ask you, so how was your week? And, what does your week look like as a researcher?
Very dynamic.
Yeah.
This past week especially was very active, because I just welcomed a new student,
mm-hmm.
and I was conducting the interviews to recruit a research technician that will join me later this year. But in addition to that, I also had to write several things, just kind of a summary of some experiments. I had to train our new student from basics, because science is also a trade. You can't learn everything from books.
Mm-hmm.
So when you welcome a new researcher in your lab, it has to start from scratch.
Yeah.
Then we have a lot of research seminars. For example, I host the research seminars at our institute. So I had another student who was just presenting their research work of their first year
mm-hmm.
of DPhil. Then I do quite a bit of public outreach. So I was arranging meeting with scientific contributor that will help me create a coloring book.
Oh my gosh, wow, that sounds amazing.
So the idea is to kind of prepare this for patients with type 1 diabetes who are younger, right?
Mm-hmm, yeah.
And it will be something that we would like to leave in waiting rooms, in the outpatient area, distribute across GPs. So children can have fun while they're waiting, and they can also learn about islets.
Yeah, we are in a children's hospital as well.
Right, so I think it's a great idea. So I was kind of pinning down the details of what I want to share with the illustrator. So let's see what they have to say on their side as well. So yeah, every week is quite dynamic.
Wow, that sounds so busy.
We move between buildings because not all the equipment and all the experimental models are in the same building.
Ah.
So yes, it's really dynamic in the physical sense of the word as well.
Yeah, I'm glad you found a little bit of time just to talk to me. I feel so grateful.
Luckily, today was possible, right?
Yeah.
Throughout the week, really, it would have been quite difficult.
Yeah.
I'm glad we made it.
Yeah, thanks so much.
Thank you.
Okay, so that was such an interesting conversation that I had with Daniela. I learned so much from her, and I'm glad that we could kind of both share our enthusiasm about diabetes, because I think it is such an interesting and very relevant topic as well. Now, just to clarify, we did talk about Paul Langerhans before, and he is actually, he was actually German, so he was born in Berlin. So there's a fun fact for you there. Now let's dive in into a little bit more about diabetes, the two different types and the science behind it. So there are two types of diabetes, and type 1 diabetes is called also juvenile diabetes, as it occurs from a young age. And this is where the pancreatic beta cells are destroyed due to an immune response. So it's like an autoimmune disease. And other autoimmune diseases include Hashimoto's and celiac disease, and these have been linked to type 1 diabetes due to a genetic mutation, where the immune system is more hyperactive than it should be. On the other hand, type 2 diabetes is kind of progressive, so it mainly occurs in older patients, and you can also have something called prediabetes, which is something that my grandma actually has. And this occurs in concomitance with other risk factors such as obesity or a larger waist circumference, low HDL, high blood pressure, and all of these are actually symptoms of metabolic syndrome. And type 2 diabetes causes reduced sensitivity to insulin. So the main difference is that in type 1, there is less insulin produced as those cells are being destroyed by the immune system, whereas in type 2, insulin is still being produced, but the cells are less sensitive, or the receptors on the cells are less sensitive to insulin, so there is less glucose going into the cell. However, in both, there is still hyperglycemia, so high blood glucose level, as glucose doesn't enter the cell. Symptoms of diabetes include frequent urination, fatigue, weight loss, increased thirst, and also something called diabetic neuropathy, where in the peripheral limbs, such as the feet, you kind of can lose sensation, and this is due to hyperglycemia damaging neurons. So it's very interesting, as I could witness this firsthand. There's also something called diabetic ketoacidosis, where the body breaks down fat or fatty acids for fuel, and these fatty acids are metabolized and they are transported to the liver and oxidized to produce a chemical called acetyl coenzyme A. And during respiration, which produces energy, or ATP, acetyl coenzyme A joins the Krebs cycle. However, in this case, they are actually converted to ketone bodies, which are acidic, so they lower the pH. And the pH of the blood is a very tightly controlled parameter, so even a slight change or a slight drop in the pH can really cause a medical emergency. Now, a really fascinating way that I really enjoy learning about of how to diagnose diabetes is through something called hemoglobin A1c. So hemoglobin is a protein within the red blood cell which carries oxygen around, and red blood cells actually live around 60 to 90 days within the blood, so around 2 or 3 months. And as the red blood cell circulates with the hemoglobin can bind to glucose, producing glycohemoglobin. And this makes up around 6% of the hemoglobin within the blood, and the rest is hemoglobin A1a or A1b, but the main one, which is 2/3 of hemoglobin, is hemoglobin A1c. Now, the more glucose that is within the blood, the more glycohemoglobin A1C is produced, so it's proportionate, right? And this is a really good indicator for diabetes because it kind of produces a result that you can look at from the past kind of 2 or 3 months instead of just capturing the blood glucose levels of a single moment in time. And if someone has diabetes, the levels of glycohemoglobin A1C should be greater than 6.5 or around 6.5. And I have actually been using the textbook Diabetes for Dummies as it is so informative, and I did take it from the library, but I'm going to return it and buy myself a copy because I don't want to return this, it's too good. And I also use Ninja Nerd because he's very, very informative as well. So those are two really good resources if you want to have a further look into diabetes. I really hope that you enjoy listening to this episode, and I think it's my favorite so far actually, but let me know what you think, okay? Well, bye, thank you for listening.
Science and Beyond!